the Women's March for Human Rights versus the Super Bowl. Which one would you rather join? When women organized and lined up to march in defense of their rights against Donald John Trump, and they realized most Americans were interested in the Super Bowl. After watching scurrilous ladies making scandalous statements and being thoroughly disgusted, Americans may now sit back and enjoy the first fruits of the NFL season, Super Bowl 51. Kind of weird. Almost like Area 51. Isn't it? Falcons destroyed the Packers while the Patriots played games with the overmatched Steelers. Meanwhile, rapper Azalea Banks, who always is in the news for controversial statements, stated on Instagram on Sunday, where she criticized the Women's March and the mission of mainstream feminism in general. Banks asked, "Why do women fall for these white feminist tricks all the time? Now that some white dude has taken office who simply said something silly about grabbing a genital, they want to march in the streets under the guise of standing up for human freedoms." Please. Back at you, sports fans. Kelly here, 608. I don't know if you, in the midst of watching all of the, undoubtedly all the marching women, if you took a break to see the sports over the weekend, but it was incredible. And I'm telling you, Tom Brady looked better than ever, but the Falcons, the real surprise was how easily the Falcons went in and took apart the Green Bay Packers. And although Aaron Rodgers played pretty well. Not great, but he played okay. On the alternative, the Falcons were ready. The Packers made some small mistakes, and boy, did the Falcons take advantage of them. And it was really something to behold. Okay, so came in, and I don't think we've talked about this since it happened last Friday after the show ended, but there was a question of what Donald would say in his speech. And he came out and he gave a very short speech that they claim was written by him. And so I've got a copy of that here for you, but it set off a firestorm, of course. Now, in the midst of all this, you've got also got this Women's March going on. And actually, my brother's girlfriend went to this thing. She flew down from Alaska. So, I mean, I don't think that he really appreciated it, but there you have it. All right, let me get into Trump's inaugural speech, just in case you haven't had a chance to hear it. It's kind of breathtaking, really. He really went after the politicians in the speech. It was something else. Here we go.
We introduced for the first time ever anywhere the 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
Did I get that one right?
Before we start this, I just want to point out that there was a big disagreement as to how many people were at this and whether there was more at the Obama's inauguration, which they showed pictures and it looked like there probably was more at his first one, without a doubt, or whether there was more women at this march, which once again seemed like there was. What difference does it make? Anyway, here goes Donald Trump in his inaugural speech.
Chief Justice Roberts, President Carter, President Clinton,
President Bush, President Obama, fellow Americans, and people of the world, thank you. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come. We will face challenges. We will confront hardships, but we will get the job done. Every 4 years, we gather on these steps to carry out the orderly and peaceful transfer of power. And we are grateful to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama for their gracious aid throughout this transition. They have been magnificent. Thank you. Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Their victories have not been your victories. Their triumphs have not been your triumphs. And while they celebrated in our nation's capital, there was little to celebrate for struggling families all across our land. That all changes, starting right here and right now, because this moment is your moment. It belongs to you. It belongs to everyone gathered here today and everyone watching all across America. This is your day. This is your celebration. And this, the United States of America, is your country. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. Everyone is listening to you now. You came by the tens of millions to become part of a historic movement the likes of which the world has never seen before. At the center of this movement is a crucial conviction that a nation exists to serve its citizens. Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just and reasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now. We are one nation, and their pain is our pain. Their dreams are our dreams, and their success will be our success. We share one heart, one home, and one glorious destiny. The oath of office I take today is an oath of allegiance to all Americans. For many decades, we've enriched foreign industry at the expense of American industry, subsidized the armies of other countries while allowing for the very sad depletion of our military. We've defended other nations' borders while refusing to defend our own. And spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas while America's infrastructure has fallen into disrepair and decay. We've made other countries rich while the wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has dissipated over the horizon. One by one, the factories shuttered and left our shores with not even a thought about the millions and millions of American workers that were left behind. The wealth of our middle class has been ripped from their homes and then redistributed all across the world. But that is the past. And now we are looking only to the future. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. I will fight for you with every breath in my body, and I will never, ever let you down. America will start winning again, winning like never before. We will bring back our jobs. We will bring back our borders. We will bring back our wealth. And we will bring back our dreams. We will build new roads and highways and bridges and airports and tunnels and railways all across our wonderful nation. We will get our people off of welfare and back to work, rebuilding our country with American hands and American labor. We will follow two simple rules: buy American and hire American. We will seek friendship and goodwill with the nations of the world, but we do so with the understanding that it is the right of all nations to put their own interests first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth. At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice. The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We must speak our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity. When America is united, America is totally unstoppable. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. Finally, we must think big and dream even bigger. In America, we understand that a nation is only living as long as it is striving. We will no longer accept politicians who are all talk and no action, constantly complaining but never doing anything about it. The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action. Do not allow anyone to tell you that it cannot be done. No challenge can match the heart and fight and spirit of America. We will not fail. Our country will thrive and prosper again. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget. That whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots. We all enjoy the same glorious freedoms, and we all salute the same great American flag. And whether a child is born in the urban sprawl of Detroit or the windswept plains of Nebraska, they look up at the same night sky, they fill their heart with the same dreams, and they are infused with the breath of life by the same Almighty Creator. So to all Americans in every city, near and far, small and large, from mountain to mountain, from ocean to ocean, hear these words. You will never be ignored again. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. And your courage and goodness and love will forever guide us along the way. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you.
All right. So that was the speech right there. A little dedication I'm going to listen to or offer to you this week. A little bit of Sinatra. And, of course, New York, New York, in honor of the Donald. 628 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 to call in, and 805-6180 is your text line. We will be back for a little analysis and some NFL. And here we go.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray.
Having listened to that, what did you think of the speech? I'll give you my my reaction to it, but I thought it was strong. I thought it was. I was amazed. What I thought the strong parts of it was what he put on. The most prominent part of his speech was a focus on the people, which was in the fact that the government exists for the people don't exist for the government. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine Obama ever saying anything like that. I saw, you know, you see Obama sitting in the crowd. He looked like he was in agony. And, but to say that, I've come to return the government to you, the people, I thought was a very powerful and a very constitutional and a very profound idea, which harkens back to the most fundamental principles in the history of Western statecraft and government theory. And so John Locke comes up with this idea of, I guess, popular sovereignty. He doesn't come up with the idea, but he represents it, basically, constitutionalism and popular sovereignty, the rule of law. The idea that government, if it is only just, if it is representational, in other words, if it represents the will of the people, and we've seen time and again with the elites putting up their ideas against the wishes of the people. You know, it's sad that these elites either don't know history or don't care about it. But when you do that, it creates disasters, and Obamacare became a disaster. Now, I have no idea what the intention of the people who put the Obamacare together was, obviously, but I mean, you know, when you take away the right of the people to decide what their government is going to be like and pretend that, you know, these secular messiahs are going to come along and save humanity. At some point, you have to draw the conclusion that they believe the only way to save humanity is to destroy who America used to be, which is kind of a weird idea since we've brought so much to the table in terms of breakthroughs. So, you know, I think the upshot is that, you know, Trump talked about a few things that I think that you can't really disagree with. Number one was that the government exists to represent the people's will. Number two, that we've let down the poorest people in America. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you think about all the money that we spend, even the money that we spend on the in the welfare system, and yet these vast, sprawling ghettos that are in these major cities, and why we couldn't do something about that. And I'm not talking about, you know, rebuilding the ghetto and giving free housing to everybody, but I'm talking about trying to figure out some way to crack this kind of ghetto environment, you know. And maybe it would be, some of it would be bulldozing some of these areas and then allowing them to be rebuilt. But I thought it was profound. I thought it, you know, and then he, in the middle of his speech, puts in what the Bible talked about and what in that we would be protected by God. I thought that was amazing. Now, here's the thing. Trump doesn't owe anything to anybody for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's so wealthy, he didn't really need to get money from other people, so he wasn't bought off like that. Number two, the establishment attacked him and continues to attack him. Now, so therefore, he doesn't have to represent anybody. Maybe that's the only way you could fix this system. Having just stated that, and this Women's March, we've got for you 3 days into office, and his first day, really his first day on the job, Donald Trump is facing an ethics lawsuit from, get the name of these people, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, who are claiming that he has contravened, he has broken the emoluments clause by accepting payments to as many businesses from foreign governments. Now, I mean, is Trump supposed to immediately sell all of his assets? The Trump label is linked to over 500 entities with businesses in at least 25 countries. All right. But where was this Citizens for Responsible Government? Let's see, what's the name of it? Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, which seems to be, I mean, if I've ever seen a contradictory name of an organization, where were they when the Clintons were selling access to her office to foreign governments and individuals, literally selling them through donations to the Clinton Global Initiative? What? I mean, you know, the reason that no one is going to pay attention to a lot of this stuff is because it's like surreal. It's like something out of this, you know, bizarre comedy. Where were all of these people demanding rights for women when Hillary Clinton was accepting payments from some of the worst regimes around the globe? Some of these places where women have no rights whatsoever. Why weren't these women marching against Hillary Clinton? Why don't they now? I mean, Donald Trump makes an embarrassing and apparently fictitious statement about grabbing women by the genitals, and now women have to rise up from around the world to march against him. But they didn't really care at all when Hillary Clinton was accepting millions of dollars from these Oriental despots and the Middle Eastern rulers who totally not only oppressed the rights of women, but have countries where being gay means that you will be killed if it comes out. So anyway, we'll take a break here. 641 Kelly O'Connell got some local news for you. And great to spend time with you this morning. I'll cover a little bit on the NFL when we come back. But, I mean, you know what? The media is destroying its brand, and I couldn't be any happier about it. But it's like they're you know what? Look, watching it, it's like they're totally powerless to stop the swirling around the drain before they go down. AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 523-1450. We'll be right back.
New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep.
All right. So, you know, we've got... Well, let me get to these NFL playoffs, but we've got a great deal of flooding in Southern California, believe it or not. And when you go to the weather.com, they really have hardly anything about it, which I don't really understand because the most populous state in one of the most populous areas, but be that as it may, you know, there's been so much rain. If it, you know about Lake Tahoe, which is at the top of a mountain, right? Got 33 billion gallons. That's how heavy the rainfall was. Even though it's not an area that is taking in a big watershed, it still got 33 billion gallons and went up an inch in one day. You can imagine that. So here's Falcons beat Packers. Here's a little bit of those highlights. Or a description of the game in any event.
If we take a look at this, we'll see the 44 points they put up today. But this was an all-around beatdown by this Falcons team.
Yeah, without question. You know, actually, Atlanta played like they've been playing all year long. They've been very consistent, top-scoring team in the league. Matt Ryan will be the MVP of the league. Julio Jones, probably the most talented receiver in the league. And then you look on the other side. Green Bay had an outstanding year. But they came in here, they were a tired football team with a lot of injuries.
Well, you know, one of the things that Dan Quinn brought with him from the Northwest was a mindset on defense. You wanted speed. You wanted people flying to the ball. I think this young defense filled with young speed turned the corner at the midway point of the season, and it's really peaked at the right time. Their ability to get there with four today was a big key. The defense far overshadowed.
I don't even know if you can hear this, but anyway, what happened in the game was the game starts off. The Falcons score, and then Green Bay turns around and tries to score itself and doesn't get a third down. So from that point forward, there were fumbles, interceptions, you know, and a missed field goal. And all of these things just led to the sense that there was a sense of doom that was pervading, pervading this game, and it just got worse and worse. And I think, as I recall, it was about 28-0 at the turn of the game. So if you're a fan of those guys, I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. Now here's a little bit from your storms that are coming through California, and I'll tell you about the Patriots game in a bit. I'll tell you about the Patriots game in the next hour because I played the whole inaugural speech, we're a little bit behind on our breaks.
The destruction continues in Southern California as the most powerful storm in 7 years dumps even more rain. That rain leading to mudslides. Will Carr live in Santa Clarita, California, as the rain continues. Hi, Will.
Yeah, Leland, California is not exactly used to this type of deluge in the past couple of years. But if you take a look at the map, we are right in the middle of the last of three major storms sweeping across the state. And we've already seen just how dangerous this can be. On Friday in Santa Barbara, mudslides hit. They swept away five cabins and tossed around a number of cars. They're still under evacuations in certain parts of the Santa Barbara area, just like we're under evacuation here in Santa Clarita, 120 homes under a voluntary evacuation. And the residents here really just got done digging out of the dirt and mud from the storms on Friday when they realized that they had to prepare for the storm sweeping through today and tomorrow. Take a listen to one resident.
Water came up over, crossed through the yard. Everything flooded into the yard and the pools, mud. It's like a big mud bath.
The biggest problem is that we've had so many fires in California in recent years. Here in Santa Clarita, they had the Stand Fire this past August. That fire burned through the trees and the vegetation on the nearby hillsides. What ends up happening when you get these types of rain is the water basically has nothing to stop it from coming down to the surrounding homes here, which can create the flash floods and the mudslides coming down. So we're seeing that potentially across the state. If there is any good news, Leland, it is that this rain is continuing to cut in to that historic drought that we've had for the past 5 years.
I think the worst of the drought is over, but you've got flooding from Los Angeles, well, really above Los Angeles, all the way down through San Diego County. And some of the pictures that you see out of these areas are just kind of breathtaking. Let's take a break now for local weather, and then we'll come back and finish her up. All right, here is a little here is a summary of the Patriots game.
Hey guys, it's Tom. Thanks for watching the Fumble. Sunday's title game between the Patriots and the Steelers went, the way most people thought it would. Sorry, Steelers fans. The Patriots are your AFC champions. Again, Tom Brady completed 32 of 42 for 384 yards with 3 touchdowns and 0 picks.
Well, they're just showing clips there. Brady did apparently this season, there is a new metric that they put out there. I think it's called FPP, PFF, something like that. And they have rated his season this season for Brady as being the greatest in the history for a quarterback. Whether that's true or not, I mean, I think it was 36-9. And there were twice the Steelers had the ball down within the five-yard line and were not able to put it in for a touchdown. And a great defense, but Brady was just exceptional. He's got something to prove. He had this suspension that was at the start of the season. So looks like Matt Ryan is going to win the MVP. I'm sure he deserves it, but this season really is like no other for Brady. I mean, 39 years old to set the record. And so anyway, it was an exceptional game. I'm going to have to pick the Patriots as the winners of the Super Bowl just based on this overall success. But of course, you know, Atlanta deserves to be there. They crushed the Packers. I don't think it would be a bad thing, of course, if the Falcons won, but there seems to be this sense of destiny that surrounded the Patriots this year with Brady fighting back against this. Now, there's this other player that you should take notice of. His name's Chris Hogan, who played, and I'm not kidding, he played lacrosse in college and played 1 year of football, 1 year of college football, and I think had like 18 passes. He set a record by almost 30 yards for the most yards in a playoff game. He had 180 yards on 9 catches and a spectacular player. And he had the people were off of him in coverage on average, the most of any player, like 5 yards. So he was catching balls. You know, they do all these different metrics. He was catching balls and he was scoring. He was getting long connections. So anyway, the Steelers were not up to it. Patriots versus the Falcons. We'll take a break here. We're going to come back and talk about the women's protest march and get into feminism a little bit. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 659. A little Sinatra this week for you. AMLS Cruise the same, 1450, 523, 1450, 805-6180 to text. Be back after a break on the hour.
I'll make a brand new start of it.
All right, so you've got this women's march, and we've got some analysis on that for you here. But let me first give you from Frank Luntz his opinion of the inaugural speech that I played for you at the beginning of the last hour.
Well, first impressions are everything. So what were the impressions that President Trump gave with his first speech as Commander-in-Chief?
Well, here to analyze some top moments, pollster Frank Luntz. Good morning, Frank. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, you know, the members of the media can talk all day long about their own opinions of the speech. What really matters is what the American people think. And you found that out for us.
Well, there's one clip in particular that stood out where he differentiated his leadership from those that came before him, the There's been a lot of arguments about what he said or didn't say, but this clearly was the most impactful moment of his inauguration speech. Let's take a look.
Today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people.
That's powerful. Whether our government is controlled by the people. Now, Donald Trump says that he wrote that speech. That's the best line. It's a line that I would have been proud to have created. It demonstrates that there really is a change in focus. It demonstrates that there is a change in the commitment to keeping your promises and saying what you mean and meaning what you say. There are other things in this speech I might have done differently, but that is speech perfection. He should be applauded for that.
If someone had told you, Frank, and handed you just a transcript of that speech and said that this was delivered by Bernie Sanders up in Vermont, would you have believed it?
Well, I would have expected that he would have talked about making the rich poor. I would have expected that he would have talked about a lot of free stuff. So, no, actually, it sounds like a Donald Trump speech, but he's speaking to millions of people who feel forgotten and feel betrayed, and they won't feel forgotten anymore.
And why do I think the protesters would not have come out if it had been Bernie Sanders speaking?
Well, that's for sure.
A very different tone on patriotism, on America First, for sure. But you saw those protesters firsthand, Frank. You tweeted about your experience at the Women's March. I'm going to put that tweet up on the screen that you mentioned. You said, "I've never seen such ineffective protesters in my life. They carry Love Trump's hate while shouting disgusting comments. Women's March." So you talk about the effectiveness of the inaugural. Would you say that the protests were ineffective as a response?
Well, I got hit directly by it, and I've debated whether or not to talk about it because I don't want to encourage it. I do about 100 paid speeches a year, and I don't want this to ever happen to anyone, particularly me. But a woman walked up to me in the Marriott Marquis, and she shouted, "You fascist," and then two other words that would get me fired from your network. And she threw this red confetti glitter right in my eyes, and she picked up another handful, and she was no more than 6 inches away, and I was covered with this stuff. And since when do you have the right or just the ability to attack people in a private setting, in a private matter? I mean, you're going to end up hurting someone. I'm going to tell you something. These protests are out of control. The language is out of control. There are 8, 9, 10-year-olds watching this. They read these horrible words from these signs. And to have to face this personally, I mean, you can see I get choked up. I never thought this would be America. I never thought this would happen in this country.
Frank, I'm sorry you had to do it.
All right. So what are the women protesting? Here is this beginning speech by Ashley Judd, called Nasty Woman. I'll play a little bit of it for you. Written by, and there's an article in the Daily Mail, Dunkin' Donuts worker 19 who wrote Ashley Judge Women's March speech says, "I knew it was going to offend, but she stands by degrading the Trump family by talking about Trump's interest in his own daughter, his supposed interest in that." But here's Ashley Judd. And so the question, what do these women hope to gain and what do they stand for? And is feminism a positive or a negative or a mixed movement for America? 523-1450 and 805-6180. The movement that you're not allowed to disagree with by name is feminism. Here is the beginning of this speech. By the way, this is Michael Moore is starting this thing out. He's so unhinged, it's surreal.
Oh
Michael!
My God. Ashley!
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is
and
here.
I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back, all the way down to 17th Street.
Wow!
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty. nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a death track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell. Blacks are still in shackles and graves just for being black. Slavery has been reinterpreted as the prison system in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. I am not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed the cabinet electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber, shaming the gay out of America, turning rainbows into suicide notes. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege. I'm not as nasty as using little girls like Pokemon before their bodies have even developed. I am not as nasty as your own daughter being your favorite sex symbol.
All right, so that's how that started. And 5, 2, 3, 14, 50. I mean, you know, I don't know what these women thought that they were going to achieve, but there was a lot of really just overly emotional rhetoric, and supposedly Trump getting elected into office is the end of civilization for women across the globe, because there's these global protests. And you know, I read somewhere, I'm trying to remember how many, something like 30 or maybe it was 60, I can't remember, of these groups that got together to march against Trump were paid for by George Soros, of course, who's called Donald Trump a dictator, a would-be dictator, and a Hitler, which is weird because he's the one who worked for the Nazis and said it was the best time of his life. Why not embrace it if that's what you believe? But we'll come back, take a little break here, come back and talk. I'm just a little bit about feminism. 805-6180. When I brought this up before, there was not too much of a response. Feminism, what is it? 715 Kelly AM Las Cruces, 1450-523-1450, and 805-6180. We'll be back.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hello, Kelly. Good morning, sir. This is Bob.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Good friend.
Hey,
it's nice to get back with you.
Yeah, how's it
going? I have a commentary.
How's it going?
Oh, good, good. Going really, really good. It's going to be a great year. I was just wondering, I was going to comment on that Judd woman, whoever her name is, and she seems to be self-ingrained in herself. She doesn't know what it means to be a humble person. And all these women are abused women, and they take their anger on anybody they can.
Bob, can we hold the comments till we come back on the air?
Oh, of course.
All right, I'll put you on hold. It'd be about a minute, about 1 minute.
Okay, let's make it good, Kelly.
Thanks, Bob. Well, we've got a call here from Bob, and Bob, you had a reaction to the speech by Ashley Judd, the actress?
Yeah, Yes, Kelly, thank you so much. Ashley Judge and all these successful people from Hollywood, by the tone of their voice and what they say, it sounds like to me these women have been abused. They are mentally deranged. And what really got me was when she said, her city. Well, okay, it may be her city, but you never say that. It's always our city, you know. And these people have no idea what it means to be humble to their fellow brothers and sisters. They're very,
well,
very horrible people.
That, Bob, this is not in defense of Ashley Judd, but she was reading a speech by a 19-year-old girl about how nasty Donald Trump is. But I was thinking, I mean, what kind of a movement is driven by the chief speech or the chief idea comes out of a 19-year-old?
Well, right. How much does a 19-year-old really know? Not much. Okay, other than possibly abuse when she from some boyfriend or something. I don't know. But these people have problems, you know, and they don't know how to work with people, good people who really want to do something better for the United States. And they're the ones with the problems, not us.
All right. So what's what do you think the appropriate response is to these feminists?
Well, the biggest thing is what I've noticed, and they don't want to talk about, is the right to abortion at their anytime they feel like it. Well, you know, they don't realize, and it's very ignorant on their part. But you know, once a fetus is, you know, at least 4 weeks to 6 weeks, that's a human being, and nobody has the right to take life like that. They should be in jail.
They're all human beings. I mean, they're all made out of human DNA and human cells. And
they've shown that babies can feel and react
to pain. So anyway, Bob, I gotta go. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. If you have to cough, don't cough on air. But anyway, good call from Bob. All right, so. What is feminism? I've got a little, I mean, I honestly find listening to explanations of feminism, number one, almost all of them are, well, don't you believe in equality arguments that really don't get down to the core. When you get down to the core of it, it's so, yeah. Hate to say it, but I just find almost all of these little clips to be so boring. I mean, I don't, maybe it's just me, but I guess the ideas behind feminism are not necessarily boring presented. It's just, you know, without any sense of, you know, what the audience might be thinking. But here we go. 723, What is Feminism by Lindy Edwards. Pardon the accent, but this is the best explanation that I could find. And without further ado, from YouTube.
What is feminism? We've all heard of feminism. The term's kicked around all the time, often as a term of abuse. But most people who use the word don't know what it means. So what are the core ideas of feminism? In its simplest terms, the feminist argument has two parts. The first is about women's role in society, and the second is about the cultural beliefs that make that role appear natural and reasonable. So let's start by talking about the woman's role. The crux of the feminist argument is that we live in a society in which money is the basis of status, power, and personal autonomy.
All right. I just want to point out real quick, the way this lady defines feminism, which I'm sure is accurate, it puts it into Marx's terms, because Marx put everything into class and wealth.
The things that are highly valued are worth a lot of money, whether it's jobs, houses, or cars. Money's also the basis of freedom. If you have the money, you can choose where you live, where you go, and what you do. And if you don't have any money, you don't have those choices. It's against this backdrop that we traditionally had a division of labor in which men went out to do society's paid work, and it was culturally decreed that it was women's role to do the unpaid work. For feminists, The problem with this division of labour was not simply that women were corralled into a life not of their choosing or the low status of the role. The real problem was that it put women in a position of economic dependence. Men controlled the money and were able to command subservience. Women lacked bargaining power in relationships because they couldn't walk away if they were treated badly. For the same reason, feminists have argued that it's important for women to be able to control their fertility. If women have no choice about taking on the enormous amount of unpaid work that comes with raising kids, then they have no choice about being in a position of economic dependence. The second part of the feminist argument is about a cultural belief system, often called sexism. This part of the argument is that there's a set of cultural beliefs which makes this division of labor appear natural and reasonable.
All right, so I don't want to get into this any more, only because, honestly, I just find it, it's like drinking drain cleaner, but it's all Marxism. All right, so let me ask you this. If you have a human rights movement that is made out purely out of philosophy, which is Marxism is philosophy, you know, Marx didn't even study economics in the beginning of his writing career. He only studied it as he was getting further into the topic. He had already made up his opinion, though, on the purpose of feminism, or pardon me, the purpose of economics. He had already, you know, so anyway, to become a writer on, to try to become an authority on something you've never studied is really extraordinary. All right, so I can't even play maybe 5% of what I found, but I found so many interesting clips on this stuff. But here is a discussion about the Women's March on CNN, which has kind of an interesting point that somebody makes in this, that the Women's March is about liberalism, not women. And if you think about it, what's the purpose of the Women's March? It is to discredit Donald Trump. Is that feminism? Not really. It's liberalism, in which feminism is one of the core doctrines. Check this out.
People came out today in something that we haven't seen in this country or around this world in a very long period of time. This is not anti-Trump. This is pro-America. Okay.
See a lot of people at the March for Life. How many show up at the March for Life?
So, the March for Life, by the way, which has been going on for 43 years, will have about 400,000, 500,000 next weekend. So I'll meet all of you back here to have the same conversation next weekend, because that is ignored on a regular basis. This is not new. I welcome it, by the way. I believe in the First Amendment. Anytime women and men get together and show their beliefs and strongly support their candidates or whatever that is, that's fantastic. It's good for America, but this was not a women's march.
And also, you know, I want to say, I'll say, Chief Bakari, you know,
pro-life
women were told need not apply. We were not welcomed here. Kellyanne Conway was not invited to speak at this march. Concerned Women for America was not welcomed. Why are you laughing? It's a women's march. We should have been included.
All right. So one of the biggest criticisms has been that the women that were invited to this were only doctrinaire feminists who support, or as Bob said, radically support abortion. And if you weren't part of that group, you were disinvited, which is kind of extraordinary, really. And it does show that it's liberalism, in the same way that when women were accusing Bill Clinton of assault, the National Organization of Women now attacked those women as being non-feminists and totally backed Bill Clinton because it was about defending reproductive rights. We'll take a break here with some local news.
Fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you.
All right, so I've got like 20 different And we're talking, if you just tuned in, we're talking about this Women's March. Now, I thought I'd mix it up a little bit. I know a number of the listeners would have a Christian identity or Christian background, whatever. Feminism, from a Christian perspective, don't throw anything at the radio, but check this out. This is from a website called Christian Feminist Daddy.
Hello, my name is Steve, and I am the author at ChristianFeministDaddy.com. I'm sharing this video message with you for the same reason that I write. I want to cast a vision for fathers of daughters to work alongside their wives, their daughters, other women around them, and their fellow fathers to support the causes of equality and justice. Our wives and daughters live in a world that is vastly different than ours. They face many challenges. In the midst of those challenges, they may look to us to ally with them. It is our duty as fathers to lay down our privilege and give ourselves in support. This is why I put so much effort into being the best ally I can be to the feminists around me, because I need feminism. I want feminism. I am sick and tired of living in a world without feminism. I was a part of that world for 30 years, and I am done. I'm done with the hypermasculinity. I'm done excusing bad behavior from man children as just the way men are. I'm done injecting testosterone into everything I do to prove that I'm in dominion. I'm done with the predatory animal kingdom assumptions that have driven so much of male-female interaction for millennia. I want feminism because my religion's and society's idea of manhood is completely repugnant to me. Hypermasculine, emotionally constipated, aggressive, testosterone-fueled, that doesn't sound like any adult I would entrust with responsibility. These are the people being pressed into leadership in many churches. I teach my children differently, and I expect adults to behave differently too. I support feminism because I make a much more competent friend and equal to a woman than an owner of one. My wife and daughters are my sisters in Christ. They stand before God with value and personhood equal to mine. I have not the right, the responsibility, nor the ability to take away the choices, ministry, or self-agency that God has given them. They are not my possessions to be protected in the same manner I protect my wallet or my car. I like to look my wife and daughters in the eye with the knowledge that I'm fighting alongside them. I am much too self-aware at this point to be able to behave in a hyper-masculine, aggressive, authoritarian manner and be proud of it. I've seen how ridiculous that looks, and I could never stand the embarrassment of knowing that I acted like that.
Anyway, you get the sense of where this guy is coming from. What do you think about that? 5, 2, 3, 14, 50. That is one of the funniest things I have ever seen. What I do find interesting is that this guy, anybody who brings a philosophy into a religion and then claims that they're not only compatible, but the philosophy is above the religion. I mean, just for the sake of the argument, if the religion is based on, and all religions are not based on this idea that is found in the Bible, which is revelation that God brings his truths in from outside of the universe or however you want to put it, outside of the world and brings them in. It is kind of interesting, kind of funny. All right, so here we've got a little bit on the storm clusters that have hit in the back east, which is one reason that California is not more in the forefront. But I don't know, the Weather Channel is kind of a weird place. I mean, it doesn't put all the weather news up for some reason. Here we go.
19 people are dead after a severe weather outbreak blasted the South over the weekend. States of emergency have been declared in Georgia and Mississippi, which were some of the hardest hit states from these storms. In Georgia, they had a couple of rounds of severe weather. We had one very early on Sunday morning, and then we had another one that came in the afternoon. And this is video from that second round. Albany, Georgia, huge wedge tornado. Look at the size of that thing. And it was moving very fast as well. Albany has about 77,000 people that live there. Trees and power lines down, blocking streets everywhere. And that tornado killed four people in Albany. And that's in addition to the several other deaths that we had in Georgia from that round of early morning storms. Here's some video out of Adel, Georgia. You can see a lot of damage there. And basically, it hasn't only been Georgia. Okay, let's talk about Mississippi for a minute. In Hattiesburg, volunteers started picking up the pieces from a big tornado that killed four people on Saturday. You got to keep in mind with Hattiesburg, this is a place that has dealt with, you know, some pretty bad tornadoes. They had a bad one in 2013. That was an EF4. This one has been preliminarily rated an EF3. So that's just a couple of examples of the tremendous amount of damage that this whole severe weather outbreak has created.
And here's your local weather. Here is a text from Kathy. I listened to the speech. I felt no hope, no unity. I feel that middle America will soon discover that putting U.S. first with no consideration of what's going on with the rest of the world will hurt and diminish this country in ways they have not even considered. I'm not looking forward with hope, only fear. I wish I had a violin music in the background. All right, here's another text. This one says it was a great speech and it was full of inclusivity at every line. You know, we're dealing with full-blown kooks in the media when you hear Chris Matthews call it a dark speech. Don't forget the regressive tax on energy, which hurts the poor more than the rich. Free speech is great. We get to separate out the unhinged from the sane. And we do have a phone call here. Who knows? It could be Kathy. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is a different Bob.
Bob number two or Bob number one, depending on how you see it. What's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what. The one thing that I noticed that I heard almost no one talk about was Trump's respect for the military. The Christmas and with which he returned the salutes during the parade was so different from the haphazard, slovenly method that Obama used.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that Obama had a real struggle with the military. Obviously, from his convictions, he was anti-war when he came in and everything, and he never really totally embraced the military, did he?
No, I never felt that he gave the military a bit of respect. Like it was something he had to tolerate and put up with.
All right. So, any other?
I would just say that having a lot of women in my life, for everything from my wife to my daughter to my granddaughter to my great-granddaughter who is in college and scattered over several states, there is none of them that supported this Women's March. They all were Trump supporters, and they all feel like we're on a better path.
Well, you know, there is an idea that's put out by doctrinaire feminism that to be a real woman, you have to be a feminist to be enlightened. And to support women, you have to support feminism. And if you don't, you're anti-woman. I mean, that they've made it totally, you know, dependent on those ideas.
Yeah, that. And then they also indicate that any woman who doesn't support their particular movement is obviously ill-educated, basically low IQ, et cetera. And I can tell you that in my family, that's not the case. Our women run anywhere from a doctorate to master's. So.
Well, and I mean, the sad thing is that this idea out there that you have to accept abortion on demand without any sense, without any contemplation of whether these are human beings. And if not, then you're not a real feminist. I mean, feminism is its own worst enemy.
Well, I think it's become what at one time maybe had some validity to the movement has just become almost a laughingstock as far as the majority of the country is concerned.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call. Great call, Bob. All right, folks. The fact of the matter is that feminism is a very dark movement, and it's very angry and violent. And I mean, they've got 1,000 excuses for why they do what they do, but if you buy into feminism, there's no standard for women. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Jeffrey, what's going on?
I was listening to Bob, what he was saying, and it only makes a lot of sense. What happens when you take a movement or an idea and you start saying this is the only way, you take that idea or movement and you turn it into an actual cult?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that's obviously they have cultic-like approach to all of this stuff. Jeff, we're pinched for time. Anything else?
No, that's basically about it.
Thanks. All right, folks. Let's here, I wanted to play just a little bit of a Christian critique on feminism. You just heard the Christian feminist, who I would call a cuck if I had a chance to meet him. But anyway, actually, I posted that on his blog and on his YouTube page, and he immediately removed it because he obviously believes in free speech. But anyway, here we go. Feminism and Christianity, or the Christian woman. And this is from, I don't know who this lady is, but Revive Our Hearts is the YouTube site.
Feminism has given us a whole mindset that personal authority, and particularly authority of women, is the most important thing. And instead of bowing to the authority of God, we take authority into our own hands and say, this is the way I want to be. This is the way I want my world to be. This is the way I want men to be. And this is the way I want God to be. I think that all of us, to one degree or another, are feminists. Because feminism has been so mainstreamed into our society that we just accept it as normal. It's the way that we think. It's what we see when we go shopping in the mall. It's what we hear about what women should be like when we watch a movie. It's in our books. It's in our education system. It has been so thoroughly integrated that our whole culture screams out that feminism is what we should believe. Feminism is normal. When Betty Friedan started the feminist movement in the United States in the early 60s, she started it by asking the right question. And the question was this: what is it that will bring woman joy and fulfillment? What is it that will bring her purpose and meaning in life? The answers that feminism provided took woman on a very different path than the path that the Bible would have for her. We live in a world that is so broken. Today's women want to know what to do to make relationships work. We have so many women that are walking around broken, hurting, aching. The promise that promised them fulfillment, that whole question that they were seeking to answer, what is it that will bring me happiness? What is it that will bring me joy? Feminism said it's by throwing off all boundaries, throwing off authority, grabbing things, taking control, going out there in the workplace. But those things have not answered the deep yearning of women's hearts. And so I want women to realize that what they are looking for is really a spiritual quest, that their heart's desire can only be filled in a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and living according to the designs of God.
All right, that's the Christian feminist reaction. Now, Trump wants to cut regulations by 75%. That's stunning, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, good morning, Kelly. This is Edward.
Hey, Edward, hold on. Let me put you on hold and go to break. We'll come back. Folks, we're running out of time here, but we'll be right back with Edward, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. And I've got a little bit on Obamacare to squeeze in here as well.
Fly with me, let's take off in the blue. I get you up there where the air is rare.
Edward.
How you doing?
Hey, good, man. I had to put you on hold because we're running out of time, but we'll come back. Just make it brief, okay, when we come back?
Okay.
All right, thanks.
No problem.
Thanks. Sure. All right, so we've got Edward here, and Edward, yes, what was your point?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about this
what do you call it, this weekend about women demonstrating.
Yes.
You know, this election reminds me of that football game when New England defeated Colts 45-7, and they cried and cried that the, you know, footballs were deflated, and they never got over it. They even took him to court and tried to make a criminal case.
Yes.
You know, these Democrats need to get over it and go on with life and unify instead of bickering and crying. You know, if you look, Donald Trump's number one person that always on the news defending them is a woman, Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know what the women are crying about. And if you watch that demonstration and the TV program, you should have heard the profanity and all the stuff that they used. And even that was a threat. I'm surprised she's not arrested, Madonna making that she was going to blow up the White House.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know how she got away with it. Anybody else would have said that. They would have already been arrested. So
very true, Edward. Very true. Thanks for the call. Good points. All right, folks. We've got to get here to it was very obscene. Here we go. Donald Trump's first executive order, his first strike at ending Obamacare. Here is it. He's signing off on it. Listen to Rince Priebus.
Next is an executive order minimizing the economic burden of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act pending repeal.
Okay, so what they did is they signed into law something that would keep it would allow the government to relax the rules on Obamacare and get ready for transition. Now, here's Rand Paul. We're going to legalize the sale of inexpensive insurance.
I believe that it's incredibly important that we do replacement on the same day as we do repeal. We've had 6 years to complain, and we have complained. I've been one of those complaining about Obamacare. Replacement should be the same day. The replacement bill that we put together, our goal is to ensure the most amount of people, give access to the most amount of people at the least amount of cost. And I think this is where Obamacare failed. They wanted to insure people. Their motives were good. Their heart was in the right place. But they put so many mandates in it that they made it too expensive. So
if their hearts were in a good place, when it turned out that Obamacare was wildly expensive and incredibly inefficient, and the deductible went up to $10,000, why didn't they stand up and say, we're going to change it? I don't believe their motives were in the right place.
What's happening in the individual market, which is about 6 or 7% of the market, you have companies like Blue Cross of North Carolina losing $400 million.
So what happened is these companies lost and they got out of the market. So anyway, there is a claim out there. I'm not sure if it's been verified, but it seems like you've got the foundation for it, if you can imagine, that they're going to get rid of the mandate. It is no longer going to be a penalty to not have insurance. You're no longer going to have to pay $750 or whatever it was, $1,000, $1,500. It was going up. There's no longer going to be a penalty. So then the question is, what happens to the people that didn't pay the penalty in the past? And we have another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show is this.
Morning, Kelly. This is David. I was out at Big Daddy's yesterday, and I put a big old sign on the back of my pickup truck, and I wrote trillion, okay, with 12 zeros underneath it. The number was so big, it took up the whole back of my pickup truck. And everybody asked me, did you vote this year? People walking by, they said, yes. I'm going, did you notice that $10 trillion disappeared? And they just short-circuited. All they wanted to do was throw back at me about how bad Trump is. I said, we're not talking about Trump. Did you notice that $10 trillion disappeared?
Will you explain are you talking about Obama spending $10 trillion?
Yes.
Yes. Good point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Nobody could answer that question. They were totally frustrated. They are not educated in anything that's going on. They are programmed.
Thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks. See, he spent $10 trillion. All right. Summing up the news. Campaign promises on day one. Trump wants to get rid of 75% of the regulations. And Foxconn going to spend $7 billion here, and which is from the Chinese government. Kroger's going to fill 10,000 permanent jobs, which means that they're counting on the Obamacare mandate going away, the punishment for having more than 50 employees, and all right, severe storms across the United States. Keep those people in your prayers. And let's see what else. You got a Super Bowl with the Falcons and the Patriots. Patriots slightly favored, but the Falcons are looking incredible. All right. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you have a great day, Kelly O'Connell. It is the 23rd of January, and make this year a great one for yourself. Meet you back in 22 hours. And I say to you, ciao.
Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly.